A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
That's my jam.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Last Talk More Movies, the show where I try and talk about movies, but never talk about anything and everything else. I am your host, Michael Breslin. To my left is...
Kiva Sweeney.
And to her left is...
Ken Coyle.
And that's it.
Oh, no, that's not all. I'm currently petting a dog here. Your very own dog, Suki.
Stop petting me. So
is that you?
You need to have a shave, Kevin.
I know, I've heard that before.
Is this Suki's first appearance since the first episode?
Nah, she was on before.
Has she been?
No!
Actually, when's that dog translator landing?
She was on the episode where Dom was on mushies.
Ah, yes. So the faithful episode.
Because I was terrified of a faithful mushroom dropping to the ground.
That's right. You were afraid of your dog being on mushrooms.
I just kill her or something?
I was more afraid that Dom might fucking eat her or something. It's a cheeseburger, man.
Yeah, it's a hot dog.
Oh, that was far better. A dog is literally on the name. Fuck's sake.
It's cheese.
Rage, you
know? I'm really rubbing about that.
So, Kiva, we haven't had you on the pod since all the Christmas New Year debacle.
I know. I was
did you have a good Christmas and New Year?
Oh, yeah. I was so busy just celebrating getting lots of expensive stuff. Like, Christmas rocks.
Lady of luxury.
What swag did you get?
So, I got a lot of Lego.
Yes.
That's me. I know, but I also got a PS4.
What?
I felt like I was 16 again. It was really good.
Did you also get Lego Dimensions? That's what I got.
No. Swappy, PS4.
Stop raining on the parade, Mickey.
You need a PS4 for Lego Dimensions.
He must have been that kid in school. What did you get for Christmas? Well, I got this.
Oh, I'm saying we could have played it together.
You should start a Lego club. What? You used to be two Lego collectors? Or are you one of those kids as well who doesn't want to share his toys?
I'll share.
Are you sure?
I swallow things. Like Lego.
Well, good thing you ended that though.
Does it come out as like belt stuff?
Oh yeah. It's an interior process.
Stomach's got talent.
hang on. What kind of Lego did you get any sets or just general Lego?
I got some more like mini Legos.
Oh.
Those like nano Legos.
Yeah.
That I started to try and build. I got some dinosaurs, remember I was saying, for my birthday. Started trying to build them. Oh, so infuriating, but so satisfying. They come with extra pieces just for me.
Oh.
I was like, oh, I swallowed that piece dead. Oh, there's none.
That one's up my nose.
I got pissed off it wouldn't fit through it in a fire. But then it's kind of sad. It's only got one leg.
And it's like ship.
And it can never come apart because it's melted together.
Yeah. It's like a blob.
Did you ever used to be really cruel to your toys, Owen? Did you ever used to like really beat the shit out of your toys and they were usually your favourite toys? I was like that fucking kid at a Toy Story.
Sid.
I was like, Sid. I really was. I had this, I don't know why, my mom must have got them like a pound shop or something because it was never on the Star Trek as a fucking Wayne. But she what do you call, it's like the new Star Trek, the boy, it was the black fella with a visor.
Oh, fuck.
Can't remember his name, but I had a figure of him and I thought he was like the coolest fucking action figure going. But then I used to do the worst shit. Then, like, I mean, I remember the time I put him in the microwave and fucking blew up the microwave. My ma was raging because she had no microwave and he was fucked. I mean,
don't put toys in the science machine.
It looked like Deadpool with his mask off when it came out. I mean, it was just all melted down and stuff. But then I thought he was even cooler for it. What other swag did you get?
They were kind of my main things. Got loads of cozy PJs and like a shed ton of chocolate and sweets and stuff.
Is it all gone?
Oh, it's all gone. There's like one triangle of Toblerone left that I only started last night, and there's one triangle left.
I love that Bully Conley thing as well. And he says Toblerone is almost like an endurance test. It's not like any normal confectionery because it's the only confectionery that you cannot eat without hurting yourself. Because if you try and bite down on Toblerone, it's going right under the roof of your mouth. You know what I mean?
And then it has those weird shards inside it.
He said as well that they're, the Toblerone obviously are supposed to be based on the Alps, as if the Alps are all the very same size and right behind each other.
Is that why they're triangular?
Apparently, yeah. Apparently they're supposed to be because they're like Swiss, aren't they?
Probably.
Swiss Alps. That makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. It sounds made up.
Did you Google this Wikipedia Toblerone immediately?
No.
I guarantee it's right.
But surely if it was the Alps, they would the triangles would go in a triangle themselves, so like the middle one would be the biggest one.
Oh, that'd be impossible to eat them, Mickey. Picture that package
just
in the bag.
Yeah, think about the packaging.
Mickey.
It would just be a triangle.
But imagine trying to get that big, like, the big middle one in your mouth? No, it's not happening.
It's not happening.
You don't need to do it all one go.
Kiva swallows things, though, so you know what I mean? Oh, shit. No, they have to be based on the Alps. The Alps are the mountains, not on the packet.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, come on. They must be based on the Alps.
Well.
They're based on mountains in general.
Only seen the packet for 2 seconds. Fuck you, packet. How about the chocolate?
Kiva's never actually seen a packet of Dublin. Just had the chocolate.
In general, any food stuff. She's just never seen a packet whatsoever.
I never went to a supermarket, okay? Sorry.
She just knows it's almost like a fucking sense.
I just use my smell.
Danger bottle. Haven't heard that in a while. I was kind of sad that last podcast. Yeah, I know, but it was kind of sad last week because I felt empty inside me, but not doing. We were all too fucked.
Well, no, I was drinking. Dan and Shan. Well, Dan was having a wee hot whiskey as well.
Oh, I couldn't.
Shan was here.
Possibly couldn't.
Shan had a bug of 6 days of drinking.
That's also another. I meant to say that about Christmas. Christmas.
That's stomach bug alcoholism.
Presents and too much booze.
Oh, so fucked. Who knew that going to your fucking in-laws birthday party is gonna wreck you so much, like. And then Ed was saying that last time they're not even big drinkers. I think they specifically knew that I started back at work after my Christmas holidays at 9 the next morning. It's a trap. That's, it definitely was a trap.
That's such an in-law move.
I know. They tried to get me really fucked up to see what I would say about them or some shit like that there.
Just they screw you over. They secretly hate you, Sean.
Well, I was being a serious Johnny Tightlips. I give them nothing that night. And I give them nothing that night because I physically couldn't fucking speak after 11 o'clock.
How's it going, Sean?
Who are you?
Tumbleweed.
Okay, so the danger bottle this week is, it actually goes quite well with Shan's car out because people can't see it, but he's brought like a wee mini car out for himself. Yeah. He has a wee half bottle of vodka,
cookie,
and 3 cans of Coke, when normally he lands with a big bottle of Coke, a big bottle of vodka.
This again is the Christmas hangover still in play here, you know what I mean? I'm trying to wean myself back into drinking again. What is this?
It's all the same thing, but we each have our own bottle of it.
Ah.
So here we go.
What is this?
Porvu.
Oh, thank you. Dragon Stout. Oh, my word. This sounds fucking incredible.
Oh, I'm undead already.
Product of Jamaica.
Wow, since 1920, apparently. Original Jamaican Stout. I've never heard it. It's 7.5%.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my
for
God.
For a fucking stout.
This I have to go to work.
I know.
140 a bottle.
Think of the workers, Mickey.
That was pretty good.
140.
A bottle.
This must be nasty as fuck. 7.5% stout. It has to be awful.
No.
Right, do we have a bottle opener?
We do.
I don't think we've ever used a bottle opener in this podcast.
Not for... Oh, well. What was fucking Heron's one? Hannah Montana. That was a bottle opener.
That's right. Well, we've been recommended as well a danger bottle by our fine composer, Ryan Scruff McGarrigle. Apparently, it is a huge bottle of beer. It's like made in fucking Czech Republic or something like that. But it's like 12% volume, but it's like it's a beer, like, or whatever. It's an ale, but I just love the name. It's just called Demon.
Demon. Oh my!
But apparently, it's got a weird sort of Eastern European inflection on it, so it's Demon.
Demon. Where do you get that shit?
I don't know. We said you get in Tesco, but I looked for it once and I couldn't see it. Right. Well, let's
go to the waterside.
You can go to that big Tesco.
The big Tesco's good. Nah, I think I was actually the one down the Strand Road. I'll give the waterside when I go.
Okay. Here we go.
Should we all drink?
Cheers.
To the new year, new health, and new year, new me, and all that shit.
Happy dragon.
Happy dragon. Happy dragon. Oh, it's got a kick to it. You can taste that 7.5% straight away.
I got scram.
It's got a very
dessert-like
flavor.
Are you a stout man yourself, Shango?
How do you mean? You saying that I'm overweight?
Didn't want to say.
I mean. I don't know. I don't quite know what that tastes like. It's kind of, I wouldn't say chocolatey, but it tastes savory in a way.
No, sweet.
Sweet.
The opposite of savory.
Oh, aye, that's it. I don't know my taste.
The kind of the fizz of it is like throwing me off. Usually I expect stouts to be relatively still.
Yeah.
But it's good.
I know. I get what Shan's saying about the chocolatiness of it. There is a kind of like sweet note of it.
In fact, like, I mean, what would that be then? It'd be 6 of them for £9? I'd take it. I mean, you'd be roped off after about 2 or 3 of them.
And I like how the bottle, like, doesn't make me feel like I'm not a normal sized person.
Like it is a small one. Yeah.
The bottle makes you feel like you're in control.
It's a 284 mil bottle.
I won't be in 10 minutes.
You know what? A responsibility for Kiva's future employment, I think we should take that ball off her right now.
She's fine. She's got this shit. She's got this shit.
You don't have to go to work, Mickey.
No one at work listens. It's fine.
And you work in a bar too, so exactly. Everybody else can be wrecked. They're not going to know.
Just say somebody about your
show. People be all, why are you so happy? I'm usually a bit grumpy shit.
What a woeful excuse. Kiva, why are you drunk? Oh, one of the fucking boys drinking on here bought me a shot. She's obviously looking at me.
No, you have to take it. Have you never seen Coyote Ugly?
No. This is my thing. I want to do work in a bar, dance on the table, and say, hell no, H2O. No, sir. I can't do that.
First day, Kiva gets up in the bar. They're all, no.
Oh,
and
that?
It was actually the fire inspector as well.
Was this a dream?
Yeah.
What was the song again? Leanne Rimes? Don't you know? Don't you? What is it?
Can't fight the moonlight.
That's a fucking tune. Also, fun fact, Johnny Knoxville makes a cameo in that film before his Jackass fame.
So he's just an extra.
He's just an extra.
It's not really a cameo if he isn't famous.
I think he had the top part of Bar Patron 1. So,
Does he whip or anything?
There's like 200 of them in there. It's good.
he got first billing of bar patrons.
He was destined for great things. Yeah, I mean, first that, then Jackass, then what'd you call it? The Ringer?
Bad Grandpa.
Ugh.
Bad Grandpa was actually alright.
Yeah, all the Jackass films are actually pretty funny. I like them, and I think though it's one of those things. If you don't like Jackass, you're not going to like the films, obviously. Yeah. But if you like Jackass, you're on that sort of ridiculously violent and like human slapstick humor, then you're gonna be on there. Like, you know what's really sad? Jackass 3, and you know that montage they play at the end, where you kind of know that it's the last Jackass film. They're kind of all going their separate ways, and I was like saying goodbye to old friends. It was kind of heartbreaking, to be honest with
you. That's what I was going to say, because the third one was however many years after the original series,
yeah,
and even a big gap between the second film, that it felt really nostalgic just watching it. Like, aye, it brings you back to being a kid.
Like, I think I reviewed for the Telegraph when I was working for them, and I think I remember writing something like, it's like seeing old friends again. Because it was, because there was, you know, because you were that familiar with them as Waynes when you watched it so much. And you kind of want to be them when you're watching them when you're 13, 14.
Yeah.
I mean, plus, like, it's something as well that I think you did with your friends is reenact Jackass.
Definitely.
As much as possible. Like, you know, yeah. I wasn't getting tasered or anything.
Daniel, you just do this one. It's too dangerous for me.
Me and a couple of friends, I think we're about, again, teenage years, we were in school. Like, me and Ryan McLaughlin and shit like that there, and we used to try and come up with our own stunts, but they were just blitting rip-offs of the Jackass ones, but a lot more PG, because we were all shit scared of the improper things, like, you know. Like,
I just jumping into a pile of nettles.
I was more like going on the supermarkets and pushing each other on the fucking displays and stuff like that, and then chasing, like, getting chased out.
Jeez, that's even a bit hardcore for me. don't know about that. Talking Although I didn't really have any friends, so I'd just be jumping into
displays. There's that mental.
Did you ever watch Dirty Sanchez?
Yeah, they're fucking 10 days
worse. Holy God. That just shows you the impact and the power of Buckfast. Yeah. They were crazy. But anyway.
I don't know, though, how they could get away with half the stuff, because from what I remember, as a Pritchard or Dint or one of them anyway, he literally gets his finger cut off with a samurai sword when they go to Japan. That's certainly illegal. Like, that's bordering on snuff film territory.
If
he's
in it.
But he was up for it, so.
Yeah, true. So they got his consent. I think it's fucking crazy, but anyway.
He got his dick nailed to a 2x4 before, so.
We've all done that. Gonna.
What have we watched this week, apart from Jackass and Dirty Sanchez?
Give us Sweeney.
Okay, I watched Housebound, which is a 2014 New Zealand produced film. It was written, edited, and directed by Gerard Johnston. I think
that sounds right.
Gerard, he did it.
I've seen it, but I literally do not know who the director is.
All right, so I watched it. It was on Netflix UK. And to me, the picture, I didn't really read fully the wee blurb, but it gave me 4 stars that I would like it. So I watched it. I was expecting a horror initially when I was greeted with the main protagonist. I think her name's Kylie in the film.
Morgana O'Reilly.
Aye, so that's the actress.
What a strong name.
Kylie Bucknell.
Yeah, she... Oh, I just thought she was... Oh, she's just... I just thought she was hilarious, right? Me expecting to watch a horror movie. And the first 15 minutes, I just laughed at her. It's her facial expressions, the way she reacts to what's happening. She's kind of like a small-time robber. She robs, like, ATMs and... Or, like... colleague knocks himself out with a sledgehammer and she's just all shit, and the way she goes, oh, I mean, I was really laughing. I saw, I shouldn't be like, I'm gonna get really scared now.
Yeah.
But it pleasantly surprised me, and being like a horror comedy, but it wasn't, I wouldn't even say it was just a horror comedy. It's every time me, I like, they like anticipate what's going to happen. It doesn't really let you do that, because it just a new plot line unfolds every time. You think you're going somewhere, something else. It was really good.
Definitely. It's constantly subverting what you think is going to happen, because I remember I was struggling for something to watch on Netflix. It was about 2 or 3 months ago. I was really fucking hungover on a Sunday, and I'd heard sort of good reports just via Netflix, because it kept suggesting it to me, and it kept giving it like 4 or 4.5 stars. Yeah. You know, I've always liked that Netflix recommendation thing, but sometimes it could be fucking seriously wrong. I'll go on that later. But... I started watching it, and I assumed as well a horror film. Now, I knew that it was a horror film with some comedy elements because of what I'd heard, but I wasn't expecting that sort of humour. And then as soon as you're kind of nailed down thinking, right, it's this wee genre mashup of horror film and black comedy, but then there's these ghost story elements thrown in there, and then it's all slapstick at times, and then it turns on there like a chiz film towards the end and stuff. It's like, you don't know what's happening, but I think it's so hard to do that well, and they've done it very well. Don't get me wrong, when I originally watched it, it was one of those ones that I had a... took maybe a few hours for it to settle on, because when I first watched it, I was like, what the fuck did I just watch? You know what I mean? But I still enjoyed it. You're right as well. Morgana O'Reilly, is it?
Yeah.
She's brilliant.
Oh, she was perfect.
She's
for
really,
me.
Really good. She's got that, just, she's got that deadpan, dry humor just fucking nailed down. Like,
I think that character worked really well, both for the comedy and the kind of the horror aspects of it. You were saying it kind of took you a while to settle into it, you know, a few hours after. I was lying down in bed, and at the end, I was sitting up. At the time, I was so captivated by it.
If you ever want a written system for how much Kiva enjoys films, there you go.
I sat upright. I sat upright.
To sit her upper.
But she's a very much no bullshit, like kind of like hard tongued, hard attitude.
Yeah.
Doesn't believe, like, she and the mother figure in it is hilarious. I think she's so funny, but she thinks her mommy is just insane for thinking there's a ghost. The house is haunted, and she's very, very much someone who would find it hard to believe in.
Yeah.
And then when she starts believing in it, that's when you're like, oh, fuck. And like, it works as a scare plus a comedy.
Just remembering, too, that even towards the end, it's not really spoiling anything, but with a psychiatrist, it turns on the almost fucking... Silence of the Lambs serial killer film too, like, you know what I mean? It's fucking rich. Yeah. It's just mental, but how it all flows is excellent. Really, really good. And you know what? Probably because it's such a low budget New Zealand production, you would like to think that it might be her breakthrough now, because you would love to see her in more stuff.
Oh, definitely, I would.
100%. I mean, it's done quite well on Netflix from what I've heard. I know that's kind of give it like a stepping stone on the bigger audience, which is something we talked about a long time ago, because I think if that would have been released pre-Netflix, it would have been just buried. You know, in New Zealand, how much a hard sell is that? First of all, it's a New Zealand film, which, you know, a lot of people won't be interested in unless it's an American film or British. And as well, because it is nigh on impossible to define, like, because it's so many genres whooped on the one. You haven't seen it, Mickey, no?
No.
I think you'd really like it.
Would you say the comedy is something like What We Do in the Shadows, like New Zealand kind of comedy?
Yeah, it's. I think there's definitely that vein of humour, that sort of, well, What We Do in the Shadows. I think these... New Zealand has a very distinct type of humour, even with like Flight of the Conchords and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's that dry, it's just essentially that dry sort of humour, that self-deprecating sort of humour as well. That's what the kind of the word I was looking for.
I know, I was trying to think that as well.
Yeah, like that dry self-deprecating humour, where they don't really take themselves too seriously, but usually the characters are taking themselves seriously, but they're poking fun at that.
Yeah.
But it's definitely quite similar to that. Definitely. I think you would really, really like it. You watch it tomorrow when you're hungover.
Maybe I will.
Oh, it's definitely a hangover.
But is it scary, though?
No, there. It's not scary, really. But yeah. there are aspects of it where you're... It's not, like, jumpy, but there's some... You are questioning what's going on. You're like, what?
Yeah.
Mickey, so you do get an element of, like, there's tension there.
Okay.
Mickey scares you, though.
No, but I like tension.
I was actually afraid.
What a stupid fucking I like tension.
I was afraid of being afraid of it.
Yeah.
When I first started watching it.
Well, so was you scared easy too, don't you?
I scare. I like it. I'm weird. But I was I'm going to be afraid. And and there was parts where I was.
Yeah.
But then it's just immediately undercut with like a joke or it just takes a mad mental turn where your brain's all, what's happening?
It is tense, but it's more sort of ghost story tension.
Yeah,
it's not like Garno or fucking like a boogeyman or some shit like that. There, it's easy tension, you would say, but it's still gets you. You know, it still keeps you on the edge of your seat.
Oh, you see that's what's good about when they're trying to take a genre and then infuse comedy into it. That so many times the comedy can be on point, but then the kind of if they're trying to bring in some like horror tropes or even like action tropes or something, that's just kind of done a bit substandard and it doesn't really like the thing that I was thinking of is Spy, which is very funny film, but the actual action in it is just a bit standard.
That's
really
an afterthought though.
It's just kind of standard. Not it's not even great to watch the action.
They got 50 cent on though for a helicopter chase, man. What do you want?
But you know what I mean. Like Spy is really funny.
Yeah.
But then, the action's an afterthought. And but when you look at something like Shaun of the Dead or Hot Fuzz, like they take all that stuff serious enough that it fits in the both genres.
The comedy, in essence, comes from the horror. I think it works well in it.
I think it's a difference though in just sort of writing and directors, because if you look at Spy, Paul Feig, is that how you pronounce his surname?
Paul Feig
is very, very much rooted in comedy. I mean, like he's done The Heat, he's done Freaks and Geeks, you know what I mean? He's got a very...
Bridesmaids
as well. He's got a very, very big comedy background. And I think he might have just found it a wee bit different. Maybe they do an action film. Now maybe he's not a great... He might be very interested in action films, but maybe he's not a great lover of them. And he doesn't really have maybe... a big understanding, whereas Shaun of the Dead, it was no doubt whatsoever that Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright are gigantic zombie movie fans.
Yeah.
So they knew the sort of how a zombie film should be structured. They knew all the tropes, and because they knew all the tropes and how it should be structured, they knew how to play in that. They deliver comedy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think that's why it works a lot better. Whereas Spies, first and foremost, written to be a comedy film with the sort of action structure as an afterthought. You know what I mean? And that's why it's kind of weaker, I think.
Aye, that's the spy film is just the backdrop of it. Aye. Then they bring comedy to it.
Precisely. Although, another thing I would say about Spy is I honestly think that Jason Statham's character is one of the funniest characters of last year. Because it's just him taking the absolute piss out of every role that he's ever done.
Fair play to him too.
So good. Like I've said, that scene is one of my favourite scenes of last year where he's so stupid. He's this, like... ridiculously over the top spy, and he thinks he's like James Bond-esque, but he's an absolute fuck up. And he's got these R2 spies taking the piss at him because they convince him that there's an actual fist off machine, like the film Fist Off. So he says that I'll just go on there and they'll not even know who I am because I'll just use the fist off machine, they'll change my fist. It's fucking so good.
Come on, Sean, Statham it up.
What?
Statham it up.
Yeah, go on, you Statham him up.
Oh, sure, your line.
I can't do that, East End.
Someone's got to do it.
Swung at the fucking face off machine, won't I? That's bridging on sort of Luther territory as well. Like.
Luther.
My copper, mate.
My fucking copper. Shankar, what did you watch this week?
Spotlight, which is just been released. And I genuinely think that it's one of the greatest films this year, if not the best film of the year. I think it's one of the best films I've seen in the past 5 years.
The year's only started.
Shit, that's technically 2016. Well, I meant 2015. Well, there you go. It definitely is the best film this year. Because I've only watched one film this year. Unbelievable. It's Tom McCurphy. I've seen all Tom McCurphy's films. He done 1-1. He done The Station Agent, which you really liked.
I really liked Station Agent.
And he done The Visitor. And he also done The Cobbler with Adam Sandler, but we ignore that.
Oh, was that him?
That was him. I know, which it baffles me because it's
see,
first.
See, when I seen the trailer for that though, it actually looked like it was going to be like a kind of nearly like comedy drama with Adam Sandler, and I was actually kind of excited about it because Adam Sandler's a good dramatic actor.
Yeah, he
can like,
be.
I was like, oh, is Adam Sandler kind of taking something a bit serious again? And then no.
I didn't understand that because The Visitor 1-1 and The Stage Nature are all excellent films and all very distinct, and McCurphy's sort of style. He's got a very distinct sort of narrative that he writes. I mean, it's very much dramedy. Like, there's a lot of drama in there and really affecting drama. And he's been lucky with the performances he's got. Like, Richard Jenkins in The Visitors, unbelievable. Peter Dinklage in The Station Agent is brilliant. Paul Giamatti in 1-1 is brilliant. But it's like, I don't know what happened with the cobbler. We'll write that off. We'll write that off to a payday or something. Like, I don't know what happened. Maybe
that's how you got Spotlight, mate.
I don't know how you got. I genuinely don't know how you got the Spotlight project after doing the fucking. Well, I suppose he kind of co-wrote. He probably got the funding himself. But anyway, back to Spotlight. Just been released. Unbelievable cast. It's a cast of actors who absolutely love. It's Mark Ruffalo, Michael Keaton, Stanley Tucci, an old favourite of ours on here, Rachel McAdams, and John Slattery, who's obviously from Mad Men. You know what I mean?
And Howard Stark from the Marvel Cinematic
Universe. And Howard Stark before he turned into Dominic Cooper. Oddly enough.
Well, Dominic Cooper.
Yeah, and you're
Dominic
there.
Cooper turns into John Slattery.
Ah, that's what it is.
Because he's the older Howard Stark.
The storyline, it's based on actual events that happened with the Boston Globe in 2001, 2002, is that a new editor takes over the Boston Globe newspaper, and Kenneth says that they should be focusing on this child sex abuse case within the Catholic Church, and it's essentially then just about these reporters, this team of reporters called Spotlight. It was like a feature in the Boston Globe. I think it is still a feature called Spotlight. They start investigating this case, and then within a couple of weeks and over the course of all the research, they find out that it's not just one priest in Boston who's been abusing these kids. It's 87 of them. Jesus. So it's like a fucking ridiculous. It's what's the word? It's like an epidemic. You know what I mean? It's almost like a fucking it's like a cultural epidemic that these priests have just got away with this abuse for decades, and it's fucking horrifying seeing them uncover it. The thing that they play really, really well in it is that because Boston is such a notoriously Irish Catholic city, it's even though they're uncovering these unbelievably bad crimes by the Catholic Church, they're almost in a way afraid to reveal it because they know that a lot of the people reject it because the Catholic Church essentially runs Boston, or they did run Boston at that time.
Yeah.
You really couldn't go against them because they had so much fucking sway and so much power. And it's just frightening, that sort of cultural reaction, because you would think, oh, Jesus, kids getting ripped, that's awful, let's fucking stop this. But because the Catholic Church had this ability and this power over people's religious convictions that they wouldn't even say boo to them if they found it out. They would just sweep it under the rug. And the way they keep describing it in the film is that, I can't remember the name of the actor, but the Catholic Church, the Archdiocese, the Boston Archdiocese has a PR man, and he keeps playing at that, oh, you know, we all know that, you know, a couple of priests have been, you know, up this kind of thing, but it's just a few bad eggs. But then this is after Michael Keaton's character finds out that there's actually 87 of them. And he's like, no, it's not a couple of bad eggs. This is a serious fucking problem.
I seen a documentary once about an Irish Catholic priest who was working in America. He had to move from Ireland because of, it's like a documentary film, I can't remember the name. He had to move from his diocese in Dublin.
Is this Deliver Us From Evil or something?
Could be. Because
really that's another documentary about, and like, they literally child just, sex abuse from the Catholic Church.
His PR, as you're saying, his PR man was saying, oh, it's a few bad eggs, it's not the church. It was the church that was moving him around to different states because he couldn't be prosecuted in different states.
This is a major point of the film that they show, is how the Catholic Church has not only known about this fucking institutionalized, widespread abuse for years, but how they've done nothing. They punish their priests. If anything, they've actually given them promotions and stuff, like, which is just dumbfounding, but they've moved them on. How the Spotlight team actually originally found out that there were so many priests, and how they tried to narrow down the number to 87, is that they got, I think that the Archdiocese of Massachusetts releases an encyclopedia of all the priests every single year, and where that priest is stationed, you know, what parish they're in, and all the ones that were on leave of absence or in treatment. This is even more fucked up. They find out during it that there's a such thing as a priest treatment centre. It's where they send the priests when they've been fucking caught being paedophiles. Treatment centres, like, crazy. It's fucking crazy. It's just this really sick sort of subculture that you would never have thought it was that bad. Like, so picture being those people uncovering this, you know what I mean? But just going actually to the film and not just the narrative, the great thing about it, I think that it's one of those things that the story is that shocking, all the more so because it's true, and the story is that compelling, that Tom McCurphy does a really good job of just, he trims all the fat. There's nothing unnecessary in there. There's, and if any, in all fairness, I think if he had anything else that wasn't just focused on that narrative, it would actually kind of be insulting to all the victims and the actual story itself. But there's no unnecessary fucking side plots about...
no love story.
No love story or anything like that, you know what I mean? Or no... Like, they mention a couple of times that one of the reporters, Mark Ruffalo, has marriages under strain, but you never see his wife once. They just mention that. Now, in any other director's hands, they might have actually done this whole subplot about him and the wife and stuff, but it really wouldn't have fitted. They should be totally and utterly about this unbelievable case, you know, that only happened recently. It's very rooted as well in sort of modern history, because whilst they were doing the investigation, 9/11 happened. And because 9/11 happened, that took all the reporters' focus off the priest, and they had to obviously focus on 9/11 and Al-Qaeda and the attacks and stuff. And there's even this kind of weird thing that they originally released the story in December 2001, but they chose to hold it off to the new year because they didn't think that the people of America would be able to handle this, the Christmas, you know, just after 9/11. So it does that as well, of kind of contemporizing it and putting it on the... your sort of modern history, because we all remember that history because it's the times that we grew up, like, you know what I mean? But aside from that, two excellent performances. Another good thing is that even though you've got such a stellar cast, and, you know, Ruffalo, Stanley Tucci, Rachel McAdams, Michael Keaton, none of them overpower the other one. They all have their slight wee moments to shame, but nobody grandstands or nobody fucking steals it away from anybody else. They're a fantastic ensemble. And then the film ends this isn't... it's not a spoiler whatsoever, but when the film cuts to black, there's some text after, and the text just basically says that, you know, this is kind of like a widespread epidemic, and then it just says, here is a list of all the parishes in the world that major child sex abuse scandals have happened, and it's just over silence, just this white text, lust after lust after lust of dioceses that have committed child sex, and I had not heard of one of them, and it just shows how much they kind of brush under the table, you know what I mean? I mean,
is it the whole world?
Over the whole world.
Was Derry in it?
No, Derry's not
in it. Do you have a wee joke?
Because I actually paused it a couple, because there's, honestly, there's that many. There's, honestly Christ, over 100 names. So, and it's, you know, kind of, it's cutting every 5 seconds, so you don't get a time to read them all. I did see two in Ireland there. Some place called Lara, and I think the other place is Wexford or something like that. But don't quote me on that, by the way. I mean, that's just me throwing out there.
We're going to get some hate mail.
One of the places was definitely Lara, though. But, I was pausing it to see, but not there, it's not on there. But at the same time, that's besides the point. It's an unbelievable film. You know, it's one of those films as well that, and it's the same with all Tom McCarvey's films, there's no real directorial flourishes, there's no kind of overly peppered dialogue, you know, there's no one standout scene. It's just an amazing story with really, really good performances, and it's just handled in such a good way. But honestly, see it, because after seeing it yesterday, it was released in the States in 2015. For me, it's the best film of last year that I've seen, and more likely will be nominated and hopefully sweep a lot of goddamn Oscars, even though it doesn't really mean anything, but still, I would like to see it appreciated.
Tom McCarthy is also the journalist from the 5th series of The Wire.
He is indeed, the really snotty fucking journalist that he does about
makes up shit.
Yeah.
Bastard. what I watched this week was... Big Trouble in Little China.
Yes. But just before you go on, I want to give a little backstory to this. me and Mickey have constantly been saying for weeks that we're starting to rub off on each other. Like, his love of Star Wars is starting to rub off on me, and my love of Kurt Russell is starting to rub off on him. But we've had a discussion. Mickey asked me to send him a list weeks ago of John Carpenter films, because you thought that you hadn't seen any.
I know, well, it's one of them ones where it's like Lethal Weapon all over again. I'm pretty sure I've seen a few of them, but I don't really remember any of them.
Yeah. Had you, well, in hindsight, now after you watched Big Trouble last night, had you seen it before?
No, I knew I had seen Big Trouble before, because I always minded the wee end bit with your boy in the back of his lorry.
Hanging on, hanging off the back of Larry. Just
we glove it, no. But, I know, I definitely remember that air bit, and... so I knew I'd seen it before, but I didn't really remember much else about it, to be honest with you. I minded your boys with the big hats, with the electric.
Badasses.
Did that inspire Mortal Kombat? Apparently, or was Mortal Kombat before that?
Apparently so, but in fairness, I mean, there's so many old sort of Asian Kung Fu films where there's characters with those sorts of hats, but maybe that brought it more into the sort of popular culture, you know what I mean? Mm. But where's Mortal Kombat made? Is it Asia or is it America?
I can tell you.
Okay. I used to buy the Pogs, but that's about all I know.
The Pogs?
They did, yeah, oh, Mortal Kombat Pogs.
What? Mortal Kombat.
Mortal Kombat was like fucking one of my favorite games though, Wayne. I love Pogs as well.
You got chewing gum with them?
What? I did not know. Do you still have them? Can I have them?
They're probably in my granny's attic. Enough. Everyone can have 500 each if they're all still there.
Who was your favorite Mortal Kombat character?
You can do it as a giveaway.
I have no idea. I just like Pogs.
Ah, okay. who is your favorite Mortal Kombat character? It's gotta be Reptile or Sub-Zero. Has to be one of the ninjas.
What do you call the guy that can disappear?
I always liked Raiden.
He can disappear? Is that not Raiden? He can teleport himself, can't he?
Aye, that's it.
I dressed up as Sub-Zero for Halloween a couple of years ago.
I know, it's pretty good. And
my Sub-Zero was pretty good?
Yeah.
Oh, thanks, Paul. I think that's the only compliment you've ever given me in my life.
Bullshit.
No, it really isn't.
You would have got one this year if you did your Monopoly Man idea.
That was far too much work, though. I was going to do the Monopoly Man, whose actual name apparently is not Mr. Monopoly, but Rich Uncle Pennybags. There we go. This is how much research I put on this character. I had the suit right. The suit was sorted. But I seen this how-to video online of how to make like a big paper mache head. But like I had the idea far too late, and it was only like 2 weeks.
Frank or something like the
big. Aye, exactly. Yeah. It's exactly like the fallen Frank. It was this big paper mache, Mr. Monopoly for handing us Mr. Monopoly head, and I was like, "Fuck, that looks absolutely amazing! I could definitely do that because I've done a bit of paper mache before when I was like six." So
I'm a professional paper mache.
I got this.
My teacher did it, but it was good.
But I was like, I could definitely do that. I put my head to his head. But I was watching these how-to videos, and this boy was fucking super talented. And then that kind of put me off, because I was like, I do not have this man's talent. But then, even though this boy was super talented and does fucking paper mache flat out, apparently that head took him 3 weeks. And I was like, man, it's 2 weeks to Halloween. I'll do something else. So,
but the clincher for that costume was your idea that you told me that, because we had tickets to go to like a Halloween thing. Old library or something?
Yeah, it's a glassworks.
Glassworks.
Well, it's in the name, Mickey. It was a glassworks.
Oh, but it used to be a library then. After
was it?
Aye, it used to be a library.
Really?
I think so.
No, okay,
I'm pretty sure. I'm not.
It was a foreign language school too. Versatile building.
It's also a Halloween ball, but you going out in the dance floor and just making it rain Monopoly money.
Someone did it. No,
next year.
My idea was they have this big fucking sack of dollar bills and just start fucking Monopoly money everywhere.
That would have been
hilarious. Just making it rain. That would have been classic.
You would have been king of Halloween.
I would have been.
You really would have been.
It would have been people grabbing it like confetti at a concert.
I would have been like Dr. Dre. Swear to God. Nah, definitely next year. You can help me. You've got art skills.
I will 100% help you.
You can help me paper mache a head.
As long as you let me help throw out some of your money. I'll dress up as the dog. No, the thimble. I always like the thimble.
Be the Rolls Royce girl, okay. Please.
We'll sort it out. We'll group costume. Monopoly.
Big time.
Or just everybody is
someone can be a dice.
Whoever gets that board as fuck.
somebody could properly be the boy that says go to jail. Just have to point all night.
A copper.
Like a kind of like a jail.
And then a speech bubble. Or you know, you could just do the board. Right, anyway.
We're
thinking about Halloween 2016. It's fucking January 2nd. You know what I mean?
But you could do each part of the board and we all just stand next to each other all night.
But then we can't make friends. What happens? We have to go to La Torlet? Or go to La Bar?
Collectively go to
the we don't need any more friends.
No, we don't. I've made my friends now.
We're good.
I'm done for life.
I'm too much of a bitch. No one likes me anymore.
I'll die alone, anyway.
You're not alone, you mama.
No, but he'll drive
me,
don't we?
Big Trouble in Little China.
Big Trouble in Little China. I know, I really enjoyed it. I kind of enjoyed it more than what I thought. I don't know why.
Oh, it's John Carpenter and Kurt Russell.
I know, it's just because you're so up John Carpenter's hole.
I never ever bring him up.
I know, but I actually really enjoyed it. And because I told Shannon I was watching it and he texted me, oh, this film will make you love Kurt Russell. And it did make me love Kurt Russell.
He's so good in it.
He's class in it. And just his whole character is just amazing. He's so funny and just... The way he goes on, on the walkie-talkie, he's like, well, what old Jack Burton does.
Yeah, I love it. It's like, he thinks he's John Wayne, but he's not. He's the anti-John Wayne, like.
Aye, because, like, when he first goes, he shoot a gun, and the safety's on. And then he shoots a boy, and the boy's all, is that the first time you shot somebody? He's like, no. But then he starts repeating stuff. It's like the Big Lebowski. He starts repeating stuff that people said to him earlier as well. He make it sound like he knows what he's on about. But, no, he's... And even when he kisses Kim Cattrall for the first time, and then he goes in and he has lipstick on his face.
Somebody goes into that, like, scratch.
No, it just was really funny. And something you said about Spotlight, that there's no kind of fat there. Like, yeah. Everything's there for a reason. It kind of made me think, is that why John Carpenter's films are, like, they're normally about an hour and a half. Like, is it an hour 40?
I think it's near enough his longest film. Like, one of his longest films, anyway.
But everything in there is either, like, pushing the plot forward or is giving you some... Everything's there for a reason, like.
There's nothing unnecessary. There's no unnecessary subplots or characters that don't need to be there. Yeah. Like,
and even for a film that's kind of as out there as Big Trouble in Little China and how mental it is, it's all there for a purpose. Like, it's not just... It's not just being wacky to be wacky, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
It actually has a point.
And then, I mean, again, it's that sort of thing we genre mashup, because that's sort of like, you know, supernatural film, and then it's kung fu film, and then it's comedy film, and it's just everything fucked on the one that just works perfectly too.
And funny enough, it made me want to dress up as Jack Burton for Halloween.
Get the wee vest on.
I could definitely rock his hair. That's what I was confident about. I could do his hair. Probably not the rest of it.
Yeah, it's obscene. He's getting in shape. Like, yeah.
They get the hair down.
Yeah. People get it.
Yeah, right. People know. They know. People know what you're doing.
If I get the hair right and the boots right, people know.
We're fucking obsessed with Halloween.
I
know.
I was just about to say, you know, it's New Year's in Derry when we're talking about Halloween.
It's 10 months away. Like,
that's... To be fair, if it took your man 3 weeks to make that head,
I should probably start that head, am I right?
If we're going to make the world's biggest Halloween costume in a Monopoly board, we need to get started.
Yeah, we do need to get started. Like, right, let's do, press stop.
All right, bye.
But you could probably do, like, the world's biggest costume, like, out in the Guildhall or something. Just everybody.
People do records, you know?
Yeah. Like, we had all the most Santas or something a few years ago.
And yeah,
we
had boring. Sorry, but like...
Aye, if you had the biggest costume of a Monopoly board, because if it's one big thing, but everybody's in it...
How many, like, $1 bills, $10 bills, $20? You have to get, like, the right amount, like, people are dressed up as ones, fives, tens. Like,
that'll end up being, like, board. Alice in Wonderland or something with
the
cards.
Has anyone done that before?
No, I don't think so.
I think it's impossible. Well, it's not impossible, just a lot of... organization that we don't have.
Yeah, it's not even that. There's more so just the effort.
Yeah.
People put a lot of effort, and we're all talking, no smell, like, you know what I mean?
I might be saying fart, no smell there. Someone else can do the work.
Yeah, no. Exactly. Yeah, you talk a good game.
We're just the ideas, man.
I would like.
We're the Halloween think tank. That's all we are.
I would make human size money costumes. I could do that.
Could you?
Pieces of paper.
Like, just stick a piece of paper on top of it.
Just a fucking stack of A4 pages, sell it together and paint it green. Not even putting any detail on there. Just
Oh no, I would have to add detail.
But back to Big Trouble in Little China. No, just there was a line in it that made me think of something that recently, I don't know if you heard, that Kurt Russell is being eyed up to be Chris Pratt's dad in Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
That'd be so good.
But there's a line in Big Trouble in Little China where Kurt Russell's, like, giving his whole, well, what old Jack Burton says, like, one of the guys he's fighting, and they're all, who's Jack Burton? He's all, me! And it reminded me from Guardians of the Galaxy where he's all, Star-Lord. He's like, who? He's like, Star-Lord, man, the legendary outlaw. And if he actually turned out to be his dad, it would be funny that they both had that kind of weak quip.
They have that same sort of charisma, the same sort of stupid humor as well, and I think they actually, in a way that you could believe that they were following something, kind of look like that kind of big bulky rogue.
Does the age work out? What age is Chris Pratt?
Kurt Russell's 65. Like,
is he 65? I've seen him being interviewed already.
Born good. On Paris Day, do you? Yes. Kind of that.
But yeah, no, just that kind of stuck out for me, that it'd be funny if he turned out to be his dad.
Yeah, well, I mean, like...
And he is Jack Burton.
Have you ever seen Big Trouble in Little China?
I've never seen it.
Oh, it's just been added to Netflix. That's the reason you watched it?
Yeah.
Well, watch it tomorrow.
I'm going to do it.
Get on that.
I know. I look to see what other films of John Carpenter.
It's only
on
Starman,
Netflix.
Isn't it?
No, Starman's on there. Ghosts of Mars.
Oh, no, don't.
And there's another, like, 1998 one. What would that be?
Oh, is it Vampires?
Aye, Vampires.
Oh, don't dare.
Aye, wait.
See John Carpenter after 1995? Doesn't happen.
What was his last good film, then? Oh, was what year
probably
was
Big
Trouble in Little China?
Well, that's 1986, I think.
All right. What was 95?
I think it's in the Mouth of Madness. It might even be 94. So post 94, he didn't really make that many films after 94. Like, I mean, he's made Ghosts of Mars, horrendous. Ice Cube on Mars. That says
that
it all.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely
what?
Awful.
Well, they'd have found water on Mars.
Mikey, topical joke.
It's not even
one,
that topical.
Sure, that was months ago. But his last film in release, because after Ghosts of Mars, he kind of went on to like a semi-retirement. He released a horror film called The Ward about 2 years ago, and it wasn't really good, it wasn't really bad, it was just mediocre. I think the most disappointing thing about The Ward was that it just didn't even seem like a John Carpenter film. When you're watching a John Carpenter film, him being an auteur, for want of a better word, you know it's one of his films, but that just seemed like your ultimate conveyor belt fucking, you know, mental asylum film that you've seen so many times before. I think Ghost of Mars took the heart out of him. Like,
maybe he just needed a wee cash injection.
Possibly as well. Maybe all them interviews are starting to run out. Like,
M beers don't pay for himself.
Although he's still making mad royalties off like fucking the Halloween reboots and stuff like that.
Aye.
And now you're sure like
they're thinking about Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah, and they remade The Thing, and they remade The Fog, and now they're doing Big Trouble in Little China. So he's probably fucking living off that dollar.
I know, because that was an interesting thing. They watch it as well, knowing that The Rock is going to be doing a remake of it.
Has that been confirmed? Has it been confirmed it's The Rock?
Yeah, I
remember
I think so.
The last time we were talking, I remember they were speculating that it might be. I think that would be... See, Karen was on it. I'm on that. Like, I think because I think that Big Trouble in Little China is that sort of mental, as you're saying. It's that much of a genre mashup, and it's just a lot of fun. The way The Rock on there, he has, you know, just as much charisma as Kurt Russell. He can be just as funny. I think he'd work perfect. And I mean, especially if he brought that Pain and Gain sort of personality.
That's exactly what I thought when I was thinking about it, because I think The Rock could definitely play that character.
Oh,
and that, you took the words out of my mouth. I was going to bring up him in Pain and Gain, because I think that might be my favorite performance from The Rock, because he's so good in Pain and Gain. He's so funny, and he's just so lovable, even though that he's like a cocaine addict and stuff. I think he's class in that film, but I think he could play the character, but I wouldn't like to see them do the same story. That's what I'm trying to say. Because I think they could tell another story kind of set in Chinatown, and that kind of fantasy mystical element still in there, but not the exact same story.
Ah, exactly, because I mean, I think that the story is that sort of out there anyway, that it doesn't have to be the exact same. Because, I mean, I think the story is that out there that just to do it again would seem a wee bit lazy.
Yeah.
You know, try and be a wee bit creative. You can have the same structure and you can have the same character in Jack Burton, who's just as stupid, but you don't want, like, a shot-for-shot remake. I think that Big Trouble in Little China has one of those strengths that it can be not only remade, but it can definitely be reinterpreted. There's some classics that can't be reinterpreted. It just has to be that story. But I don't think Big Trouble in Little China is one of those things, because it is... Well, the original was so creative and done so many different things. Like,
and that's,
I mean,
that's the kind of thing with all John Carpenter films as well. Like the Halloween remakes aren't really remakes. They're more of a reinterpreting of Halloween.
The Rob Zombie ones?
Yeah. Yeah,
they are.
And I don't know, have you seen The Thing remake?
I didn't see The Thing, but I know that they tried to change it a wee bit, and I haven't seen The Fog. I didn't watch The Thing or The Fog remakes, because I just heard they were horrendous. And I had no interest. I think that...
John Carpenter did The Fog?
He did The Fog as well, yes, indeed.
The Thing in the Fog?
The Thing in the Fog.
What's that thing in the fog?
It's John Carpenter all in.
You know what I always get confused by? Because I always get confused when the Fog and the Mist.
Ah, yes.
Because that's the Frank Darabont
that's
one.
That's the Frank Darabont one, aye.
Mm.
The Fog's a superior film. I think The Mist is a wee bit overrated. Like, it gets lauded a lot. There's a lot of tension, aye, building up. Have you seen The Mist? About the people trapped inside the supermarket, and this mist sets down, and then any time somebody goes out of the supermarket, they get ripped away by, well, you can't see it, it's hiding in the mist.
No, I've never seen it. So well, Silent Hill.
It's
or
not
is that fog? What's the difference between
I don't know,
mist
the difference
fog?
Between fog and mist?
Well, what's the difference between the fog and the mist? The films? Like, what's in the fog?
The fog is zombie pirates.
What? Why have I not seen that?
But does the fog do you anything, Dee, or is it people hiding in the fog?
No, the fog is just like a symbol that the zombie pirates are coming for you. Sounds ridiculous. It's John Carpenter makes it work.
Their breath.
Yeah, it's
it preludes them.
Just like represents their dark aura.
Your aura's purple.
What color would your aura be?
I don't know. Can you see it? Can you read these
kinds just radiates
of
off you.
What color?
Black. Like your heart.
Oh, I thought it was invisible.
I would say a deep red.
Really?
Deep red. For me?
Yeah.
For
no, mostly because of that jumper you're wearing, but...
It's a burgundy.
Yeah, I was trying to think. Look, it was either burgundy or maroon, but what's maroon?
Oh,
is maroon and burgundy
better,
not the same
like
color?
That, yeah.
Well, not the same color.
I mean, I think it's all down to where you buy your paint.
Yeah. Let's get back to the real argument, and listeners, please write in if you know this answer, but what is the difference between mist and fog?
I think fog is heavier, like thicker.
Yeah, I think so. Mist is... No, but mist can be pretty thick, man. That can be pretty deep. The Scottish even have another word for fog, which just confuses us even more. Har.
Har?
The Scottish har. It's another name for fog.
Oh, really? I know what smog is.
But
it's
apparently...
smoke and fog.
Yeah, but that's fine. We can understand
we
that.
Know, we all know that from Pokemon.
And The Hobbit.
Smog.
But anyway, back to Lord Cheney. You have anything else to say about it?
I thoroughly enjoyed it, and it makes me want to go back and watch more John Carpenter
films. That is the Yay. Exact answer, because I was about to say to you that you know you have to watch all of his films.
I might whack on Skip New York.
Yes.
Sometime.
Watch all of John Carpenter's films.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Pre-1994, though. Of which, oddly, that's almost like Netflix insulting you, really, isn't it?
Because they don't have anything.
They've got four John Carpenter films, and fair enough, two of them are pre-1994, and the other two are probably his worst.
Netflix, did you hear that?
Starman, what's that like, Starman?
Starman's brilliant, and that's... Do you know what, though? See, if you're trying to get in the Carpenter sort of style, Starman's not the one they watch, because Starman is notable for being, like, a major departure from his usual sort of aesthetic. It's, like, his lightest film. It's almost like... It's, like, a PG film. It's Jeff Bridges, who got Oscar nominated for it, but it literally is about Jeff Bridges coming from space and, like, being on Earth.
Is Crowley in it?
No, but he's not on it.
No, but is the song playing?
I can't remember if I've watched it in years. I'd be surprised if it wasn't looking, you know what I mean? But it's Jeff Bridges and Karen Allen. And it's just a very light, nice wee drama film about him adjusting their life and stuff like that. But it's very, very on John Carpenter.
So it's an oldie time version of K-Pax?
You know what? It's like, which is another good film. Jeff Bridges? I've never made that association. I've never made that association that Jeff Bridges and fucking K-Pax as well.
He's not dating him.
No, he's not from Earth.
Jeff Bridges? I like to think so.
That's actually one of the few things I liked from Tron Legacy, that he's essentially...
I think Tron, dude, what the fuck? Did Jeff Bridges played an alien a lot?
Well, no, he's not
alien. I suppose he's not Kevin Flynn, isn't an alien.
But no, in Tron Legacy, like, he's essentially playing the dude. But yeah. They're like saying about everything that's going wrong. He's all, you're ruining my vibe, man. Or something. Or like my Zen thing, man. He says that. It's like, you're ruining my Zen thing, man.
You can just picture him on the, what do you call him, the light cycle? Picture him in a light cycle, we might rush him. Hey, be careful.
Just fucking cruising. Like. Okay, and we shall move on to...
Stop. Kiva just actually made, she made a wee excited eek. Because the suspense was killing her when you you left that topics hanging on there. She went, eek. I wasn't sure if it was her or the fucking dog.
It's going to get longer and longer every week.
I can't handle it.
My topic, I wanted to talk about casting in films.
Okay.
But I have a specific kind of question, but we can go more general and they just casting things. Because I just had a thought like a few weeks ago. And it's funny, we were talking about casting Kurt Russell in Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah. And how that just kind of lined up with what he had done previously and stuff. Do you think when they're casting like big roles, like comic book roles, or even like some like Star Wars, like big franchise roles, do you think it's not necessarily about how great the actor is, but also how personable and how nice they are as a person, so like the audience can like them as well as their portrayal of the character?
I think it depends on the actual character. For that one, for Kurt Russell to be Chris Pratt's dad in Guardians of the Galaxy, I think Kurt Russell's a very likable, got that sort of, I'm not comparing him to Paul Newman, he's got that Paul Newman-esque kind of easygoing charisma about him and stuff like that, much like Chris Pratt has too in spades. But I think it's totally dependent on the character, because even to contrast it with Son, I think if you look at the casting of, and it's Son I think we talked about a few weeks back, the casting of Daisy Ridley and John Boyega for The Force Awakens, two pretty much completely unknown actors for two gigantic roles in probably the biggest franchise that there is. I think that was, obviously they have acting talent, and from that film they're obviously very, very good actors, but it's more, I think, about, it's awful to say, but the look, you know, the certain look that somebody is, because you can sort of mask, you can do a lot of stuff to mask a limited actor or a limited performer. Like the perfect example, look at any action hero of the 1980s. Sylvester Stallone, limited enough actor. Arnie, limited actor. Bruce Willis, half decent actor. You know what I mean? But it was all about the look and the sort of image that they portrayed.
Or even go back to Guardians of the Galaxy and Dave Bautista. Yeah. Like he says himself, he isn't an actor, but he's happy to be a part of this thing. Like.
Yeah. He's a limited actor, but I think it's the sort of same thing with Arnie and Terminator. I think his role kind of lends itself to him being a bad actor, because he's supposed to be an alien who doesn't know how to interact with people.
Aye, and he's ultra literate.
Exactly. Has, you know,
or literal, not literate.
Literate. Shakespeare just. Yeah. I think a while out it comes down the look. It's totally dependent. I think it's totally dependent on what type of film that you're trying to make. You know what I mean? I think if you're doing an action film and you want a big, you say, muscle bound or sort of cool, suave action hero, then you're going to cast based on looks and not acting ability. You're not going to get fucking Stanley Tucci doing the next fucking crime blockbuster or something like that. You know what I mean?
What kind of made me think about it, and I have two examples of this. That one, it goes in the actually TV, and it was Benedict Cumberbatch talking about, was he ever up to play the Doctor in Doctor Who? Because when he did Sherlock and stuff, like rumors came, or I don't know if they were rumors or if they were true, but came out that he was actually up to be the Doctor at one point. And he said that when you take on being the Doctor, you're not just taking on the role of the Doctor, you have to be the Doctor all the time.
All the time, 24/7.
If you see a kid out in the street and they're all, that's the Doctor, you know, you have to be the Doctor 24/7. You have to live that character.
Back to him.
And another one is when Ben Affleck was announced as Batman. Not that he has to be Batman all the time, but
I guarantee you wishes he was.
He has a Batcave and everything, doesn't he? But they were saying to him, like, we know people aren't going to like you as Batman. There's going to be an ultimate backlash, but there always is when you announce like a
backlash, you would say.
But so people have these expectations.
Wasted on this podcast.
But people have these expectations of these big characters, and there's certain things you need to do in your personal life to actually be able to just play a character, and it bleeds more into your life. So I was just thinking, if someone like Joaquin Phoenix was up to play Doctor Strange.
Was he? That would be very interesting.
Yeah, you see, and him playing just that character, it's very interesting. But him being a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, it wouldn't work for him as what he wants to do as an actor. He just wants to play a role. Yeah. He doesn't want to be Doctor Strange for the next 10 years.
I don't think as well that obviously Joaquin Phoenix doesn't really have an interest, and it's awfully saying, it might sound a bit pretentious, but I know that a lot of people would have this opinion that comic book films aren't really seen as high art. You know what I mean? They're seen as, whereas I think Joaquin Phoenix is more in it for the art in a way. He's more on the sort of lower budget, you know, indies and stuff like that, where he can actually show off his talent. Whereas,
but even if Doctor Strange is like a really deep character or whatever, and it wouldn't just be a one and done film. He has to be Doctor Strange for the next 10 years or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's I just find it interesting that it's down to the actual kind of person that an actor is as well.
Oh, why?
Rather than just taking on a role.
Maybe I misunderstood then when you first brought it up. I thought.
I was asking both questions really because I was interested as well that if you do look at all the actors that are playing like Marvel characters, they are all really nice and friendly, and people do like Chris Evans and Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Pratt. They're all really charismatic and really just like you like them as people. Like I love Chris Pratt. Like I love like watching him in interviews. He's really funny and stuff.
And I mean, like I don't think just you bringing that up. I don't think it's any coincidence that that's why Edward Norton got the boot. You know what I mean? Because Edward Norton is kind of notorious for being a wee bit more introverted. He hates the celebrity lifestyle. He's quite difficult to work with. He kind of overrides the writer at times and tries to write his own films. And it's no coincidence that he was replaced as the Hulk and wasn't in the Avengers. Whereas they got Mark Ruffalo, who's kind of personality-wise the polar opposite to Edward Norton.
Aye, but he wouldn't be as extrovert as the rest of them, but he still he seems really nice.
Yeah.
And you can like, there's a likability factor there, which I think is what I'm kind of getting down to.
Obviously, in acting circles, I think like in any professional circles in the world, you know, be it if you work in an office, if you work in a factory, I think if there's a team of people working together and you're looking for somebody else to come in and do a job like an actor, then it's totally based on reputation as well. I mean, obviously, if you're Edward Norton, I'm not saying if this is true, but this is the reputation that he had anyway in Hollywood, was, and he kind of took the piss out of it in Birdman.
Aye.
You know what I mean? Is that he had this reputation of being really difficult to work with and quite obnoxious, and as I say, like trying to write his own scenes and not listening to directors and stuff like that. And if you hear that about someone and you're trying to have a nice, easy production, you want everything to run smoothly, then that's going to knock him off your list straight away, you know what I mean? Whereas if you hear of an actor who is, you know, say just as talented as Edward Norton, be it Mark Ruffalo or be it someone else, and not only has he got the talent, he can deliver the performance you're looking for, but is also sound, is also really easy to get on with, and obviously you're going to look at him, you know what I mean? Obviously you're going to look at him first. I think just that whole personality thing that you're talking about, I think that just bleeds on the everyday life in general, you know what I mean? I think it's just someone that you prefer. Like sometimes maybe you're looking to go a bit weird with, maybe sometimes you're looking to go a bit introvert. Like Daniel Day-Lewis is seen as maybe one of the best actors, if not the best actor ever, but apparently when he's on set he's a nightmare. But you'll happily overlook that because you know for a fact you're going to get one of the best performances, if not the best performance possible.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's totally, I don't know, it's kind of balancing act. It's totally dependent on what you're looking for too, you know, what the finished product will be.
Like if you're, but like going back to, suppose if you're looking for a hero that everybody needs to get behind, like you want that kind of likable person, and that's, I think that's where it bleeds in. They, you see them in interviews and stuff and they're really funny and stuff like that.
Daniel Day-Lewis should have been Iron Man. You know what would scare me actually? If Daniel Day-Lewis actually got the role of Tony Stark, he would be probably trying to fucking cut his own heart out or something. Like building the suit himself.
Out of fucking wood.
As we gouged on a wick.
But that, I would actually love to see Daniel Day-Lewis in like a comic book film. Like obviously it would need to be like a one and done kind of, like he could be a villain for one film or something, because he would never sign on to any multiple
never
films.
Do it.
I know, but imagine you got like would you say you would never, like if you look at some of the big actors they have gotten in Marvel films, you know, you have Anthony Hopkins, you have
this is Daniel Day-Lewis, like, you know what I mean?
Right, well who's just below Daniel Day-Lewis?
I'm not saying there's any sort of hierarchy. Obviously, there's,
I know,
there's
I know,
actors
I know.
Who are talented, but it's just knowing Daniel Day-Lewis's own... That's a fight, fuck, I'm on the phone to him all the time. But just knowing what the sort of actor and the sort of roles he chooses, you know for a fact they would go,
I know, I know he would never do it, but I think it would be class if they could persuade.
All joking aside, I thought he would have been the almost perfect Doctor Strange.
Because he is so strange.
because, I mean, Doctor Strange is supposed to be a ridiculously dark and introverted character, and don't get me wrong, Benedict Cumberbatch can do that, no bar whatsoever.
Did you see the pictures that came out of him?
I seen the picture that came out. It's kind of weird, though, because he does look like him, and the suit looks apart, but then he's just standing in front of this white background. He just looks really boring. It's like he's standing in a fucking photography studio or something like that. I don't know.
I know.
I thought they would have spiced up the background a bit.
No, but, like, everything looks right, as you said, but then it is just Benedict Cumberbatch's face. It's just a bit weird. It's like, you know, just change the face in the airplane.
It's like somebody landed around just fucking took those photos in this garage or something. You know what I mean? Fuck's sake. It's the first production shot you're going to see. At least try and make it a bit enticing. Especially when Doctor Strange is probably, in all fairness, Marvel are masters at this because they've had to do it so many times. But I think Doctor Strange is their biggest sell yet. Because, except I would say diehard comic book fans, or not diehard comic book fans, but comic book fans who are at least on the know, popular conscious wise, I don't think anybody knows about Doctor Strange.
But they've had this the last couple of years. I mean, they had that's it with, saying, though, with Guardians, and they had it with Ant-Man.
Precisely, that's what I'm saying. They're masters of doing it. Like, so I have no worries if they haven't introduced them, but I do think that Ant-Man is at least comedic. Guardians of the Galaxy is comedic. Doctor Strange is comedic whatsoever.
You know, they have a horror director doing it.
It's a horror director. Who is it? Is it James Wan? Who is it again doing it?
No, it's the boy at the Sinister, is it?
Is that not James Wan?
No, maybe it's not Sinister. Insidious.
Ah, shit, I forget his name. He's good, though.
I know his name. Anyway, Kiva, do you have anything to say on casting?
Well, I mean, I kind of get what you were both saying. We're all kind of on the same page there about the kinds of film. Mm. So it depends on the kinds of film and the kind of actor. But I think a point that I was thinking about was, you were talking about interviews, but these days, like, a load of celebrities or especially actors, not especially, but definitely so. Everyone has their own Twitter feed, their own Snapchat, their own everything. And if that's another likability factor that's going to rate your film a bit better, then I definitely think it's probably something that people look at when they're casting.
Yeah. It goes on that ultrasonical thing too, it is that ultrasonical thing, like the machine, as Heron used to call it, is that, you know, are they actually that nice? Are they, all these interviews not like really fucking pre-scripted, or is it not just because they are professional actors, so they can obviously act nice when they want to? But I suppose that kind of goes out the window. You'll never know.
But Chan, isn't that the ultimate role?
I put on a smile every day.
Like in an interview, you can act and stuff, and then it's important to remember too that a lot of these Twitter feeds and Facebook pages, it's not their PR team, it's their peeps. So I mean, is it whether they're nice or whether they're willing to let someone
be nice
on their behalf? Because a lot of people would be all, no, you can't pretend to be me and say these things, and some people would be like,
it's like
fine.
I heard an interview with Tom Hanks, and he was doing, you know, an AMA on Reddit, and the way they were going to do it is just they tell him the questions and he says his answer, and then somebody was going to type it up for him. And he was all, no, I want to type it. I'll type it up. Like, it's great. So then they had to get like a whole different computer and all because he wanted a Mac. Like, he didn't want to use a PC or something. So it took it.
What a diva.
I know. Tom Hanks been a wee diva.
Not even that, but in fairness.
It'd be funnier if he had to use a typewriter or something because he's really anti-typewriter.
Carrier pigeon or something. But like, that's sort of 50-50 because, again, it just shows the fact that Tom Hanks wanted to do it himself. That's why he kind of gets the label of the nicest man in Hollywood. Like, you know what I mean?
He's the nicest man.
And he's your favorite person, is he not?
He's just so lovely.
He is.
He can't help but, like,
we watched that
movie. I really, 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 really like him.
I like it. Because even me and my granda were sitting yesterday, New Year's Day, just had the dinner. New Year's Day dinner, and we're fucked, just really bloated, laying on the sofa, and the terminal came on, and my granddad, like, doesn't really like films that have been made after, like, 1955, or don't star John Wayne, so we were sitting watching the terminal, but for whatever reason, even he loves Tom Hanks. Like, he used to, my granddad, like, used to have You've Got Mail on DVD, you know what I mean? Like, what the fuck is that about? But he's like, oh, man, my granddad, like, Tony doesn't know people's names, he knows his name, like, everyone knows Tom Hanks. He's like, your man Hanks, or something like that there. I was like, you know, just tell me, you know. But the terminal's fucking ultra cheesy.
It'd be weirder though if he's like, oh, that's your man, and then make like some obscure reference, like, oh, that's your man from the Burbs there. back to what we were talking about. Insidious was James Wan.
Yeah.
Sinister was Scott Derrickson.
Erickson?
Derrickson.
Derrickson.
Who's directing Doctor Strange.
Nice one. Sinister's really underrated as well, but anyway, moving on.
I know, it's just we got them mixed up. Hey, well, is there anything else you want to say about cats? I thought it'd be an interesting kind of thing to talk about.
I think it's definitely one of those things that you could literally talk about it all day, because really when it boils down to it is you're talking about the personalities of people who you've actually never met. So you could really speculate on absolutely anything.
And you could go super cynical with it. Like, yeah. Well, obviously, like, interviews and stuff, they're all kind of... They're not scripted, like, but, like they have the pre-interview, so they kind of know what they're going to say and all that kind of crap. Although, what'd you call them? Before James Corden took over for the Late Late Show.
Steve Letterman? No, Craig Ferguson?
Craig Ferguson. He actually didn't do any of that. Like, when he had a guest come out, he would always rip up the cards and then just have a conversation with him. Because before he stopped doing it, I started watching a lot of his stuff on YouTube, and he's really funny because it is just a conversation, and they don't really, it doesn't feel kind of, oh, so you came here on a bicycle, how was that? You know what I mean? It's like, that's the worst thing for me. Graham Norton does it a lot, that they have the big celebrity, then the second celebrity, and then a comedian.
Mm.
And they just go to the comedian once or twice. They do a bit from their act.
Yeah.
And they're all like, oh, you've drank Guinness before. How was that? And it's like, oh, don't talk about Guinness. It's fucking, you know. And then they go and do a whole bit. And it's just so forced. And you're like, oh,
I hate that as well with panel shows. Like, they try and act like panel shows. Or, you know, like, sort of in the moment stuff like that. And how people don't realize that this is most of the time six comedians and one presenter sitting there, and then it just so happens that stuff in all of their acts comes up, and even the way they deliver it doesn't even sound like normal conversation.
Yeah,
but it just seems, like you said, so forced and so unnatural, and it's not even funny. I don't think, even if the content of those jokes are funny, you really fight with yourself to laugh at it, because you know that you're being played for a fool. You know what I mean?
What was the show? We were watching like a YouTube clip of it, and it was Daniel Radcliffe doing this like complicated rap of the alphabet.
Oh, it's Jimmy Fallon.
Fucking Fallon.
Oh my, like, I thought that was such a good bit they have on a show, but the way he presented it, you did feel like a fucking idiot.
Exactly.
You're like, come on.
The way they actually like come, like, talk and it kind of is like, oh, so you like music? And
but I didn't understand that. Why not just say, oh, you've prepared this? Because even...
I know, you did this.
Impressive thing isn't the fact that he's doing it off the cuff. It's just the fact that he can do it. Yeah. You know what I mean? I fucking hit TV. Honestly, especially Jimmy fucking Fallon. I cannot stand him. Anyway, let's move on before I go on that fucking diatribe with him.
But just one more thing just about comedians. It's worse when they're doing a bit of a thing you've already seen. Because Because Stephen Merchant had like a comedy DVD out, and I thought it was quite funny, and so I knew the bits from it, and then he was on Graham Norton, and he did a bit from that DVD like the exact same way and saying it, and it's like, why are you doing like old material? You know what I mean?
I know.
It's just strange. Like,
it's almost like, oh, bring him out, let him do his party piece. You know what I mean?
And it's nearly like insulting the people that you're watching. It's like, oh, just give them an end, you know?
But comedians do kind of, to be fair, tour on a circuit, so like a band would tour on an album.
I know, but this was years after that DVD came out.
Really? Yeah, so like, he's already toured that material.
I know, like, because the DVD normally comes out at the end of the tour, like.
Yeah.
Oh, that's even worse.
That is worse.
Yeah, and the worst thing is too is that obviously if you're a comedian, then you're usually a naturally funny person. So if you actually, as a presenter, just had a conversation with a comedian, then I guarantee they'd be just naturally funny, or at least you would get some sort of interesting conversation with them.
Because I think Stephen Merchant is naturally funny. Anyway, I won't lie, it's probably mostly his accent.
Yeah.
But and the fact he's in Portal 2, which is one of my favorite games ever. But if Steve Merchant's funny, I mean, like, he's done podcasts with Ricky Gervais and all, and he's really funny in them, and that they're all off the cuff kind of stuff. Well, maybe it's not. Maybe it's all scripted. But Carl Pilkington doesn't exist. He's Dave from Essex. But, you know.
Huh? What?
This is where we've got another podcast called Conspiracy Theories of Michael Breslin.
They're just all about Carl Pilkington.
I just love him. He
looks absolutely baffled.
I'm baffled. This is a conversation for another day.
When they started doing the whole stuff with Carl Pilkington, like, there was rumors that, oh, this is a character, like, Ricky Gervais and Steve Merchant came up with, and they, like, he's just an actor and stuff like that. But it's obviously balls. Like,
he must be a very good actor if it's true.
No, it's not true. Because they said before, we wouldn't have wasted a character this good on this podcast.
Exactly.
Like, they would have made a whole sitcom about it.
Right, same. And if he is that good an actor, then Day-Lewis, watch out. Fucking hell.
Imagine Daniel Day-Lewis in the Carl Pilkington
story. Imagine Carl Pilkington as Iron Man.
Imagine.
He's so good. Don't know about these blasters here.
What's the way I'm even locked up for? Like, what's the problem?
Why am I in a cave? I don't know.
I mean, some people might like caves. I don't.
Okay. We shall move on from that topic. That was good.
Yeah, the good night. Went off on one, like, but she wants it not.
Sean Coyle.
My topic this week, and oddly enough, it's been brought up a couple of times tonight. How convenient. It's almost like we talk about this beforehand. But
like it's scripted. Or something.
It's all part of the machine, man.
Burn it.
Give it my notes.
I actually thought one day maybe we should actually try and script an entire podcast and see how natural it could be.
Oh, do you want to just do it as an experiment to see if anybody catches
that's
on?
That's what I was thinking.
Hi, my name is Kiva.
We just come off sounding like a fucking automated system. You know what I mean? But
the time sponsored by Accurist will be.
Have you ever talked to somebody that sounds like an automated telephone though? They're all, hi, nice to meet you.
I just press one.
Topic this week is genres. It's more like a kind of sort of personal opinion thing, a wee bit like yours, Mickey. It's genres that you would like to see mashed up a bit more. The reason that I wanted to do this topic this week is I was babysitting my brother the other night, and he's like 8, so obviously he wanted to watch like a superhero film, and I was kind of Captain America the Winter Soldier, because I remember watching it, but I think the first time I watched it was blocked. I can't really remember it that well. This happens with a lot of films, I mean, like, to be honest with you, but I put it on, and again, I really enjoyed it. But what I noticed about the Winter Soldier, and I just thought was really interesting, is that first and foremost, it's a superhero film, but why I think it's kind of elevated above a lot of the other Marvel films is because it's a superhero film and like a conspiracy theory spy thriller, almost like kind of like the 70s paranoia films, like, you know, like the Parallax View, which I recommended before, and 3 Days of the Condor. And apparently I didn't know this when I was watching it, but 3 Days of the Condor was a major, major influence on the screenwriters and on the directors. And that's so evident.
Why you call them again?
It's the two Rosses or something. They're from Community. They're the directors. Anyway.
Russos. The Russo brothers.
They directed, and I think they wrote for Community too.
Yeah.
But I seen that, and I was like, that's just such an interesting spin, because that's, be honest with you, right? I mean, all Marvel's films may be quite entertaining, but you're essentially watching the same thing every time. You know, be it an origin story, or like there's the big bad, and you're watching, you know, a lot of the same set pieces. And I just thought it was really nice to see it a wee bit more, well, besides the M1, obviously there's all these massive explosions, but for the main part in that film, it's sort of realistic as you can get for Captain America. Fight scenes, it's practical effects, and then it's just aided by the fact that the narrative is more sort of stripped down and more realistic, like more akin to like a government cover-up, you know, and not some fucking super extraterrestrial force or whatever.
Yeah,
I just found that really, really interesting. So then I started thinking, fuck, you know, it's because I would have never thought of mashing those two genres up, spy, you know, conspiracy theory, spy thriller, and superhero film. So I thought, if that can work, then what, you know, what genres would I like to see mashed up? And then I remember a few weeks back, I was talking about Bone Tomahawk.
Bone Tomahawk.
And I was saying that the reason I was really intrigued is, first of all, because it was Kurt Russell and it was a deconstruction, but more so because it was the Western and horror being mashed together. And I thought, that sounds really, really interesting. So, you went and watched Bone Tomahawk again too, didn't you?
I watched it then, and yeah, it was a very good mashup of genres.
It is a very, very good mashup. But I was just wondering, personal opinion-wise, you know, there's no right answer here, folks. Say what you want. Say what you think. But what genres would you like to see mashed up a bit more, or what would you think would be an interesting mix?
I think comedy and horror is a good one that we discussed earlier. I think that's a solid one that there's not a lot of it out there, but when it's done right, it can hit really hard.
It's always hitting that balance. So
yeah.
That's the thing.
You see, because comedy and horror are so opposites, like, it's, you're right, you need that balance of when do you cut in with a bit of comedy, or when do you let the horror kind of suspend you a bit.
Yeah.
I think they are quite opposite, but I think partly why they work together, I don't know why they are done more, is because when you're laughing or something's making you laugh, I think it is kind of affecting you in a similar way of when you're afraid. Now, this just might be my love of fear.
Yeah, you're a weirdo.
I think there's certain films you can watch and you can kind of spectate, but I think comedies and horrors are kind of, you're participating in that watching experience.
Yeah.
And the two of them together, I think, why not?
It's almost like a sensory sort of release. Yeah. No, we're not going to get like fucking Freudian or psychoanalytic.
I know, but like,
I really wouldn't know what I'd be talking about. Like,
no, but we've talked about it before. Like, watching a comedy with a crowd of people is way better than watching on your own. And similar thing with horror. Like, it is a physical,
an
visceral experience.
Yeah. It's like, I think with comedy and horror as well, not only is it striking that balance, but it's very easy for one to dilute the other. I think it really depends on what sort of film the actual director's trying to make. You know, if you want a comedy film with horror elements, then obviously the comedy has to be strong. And if the comedy's strong, it'll kind of dilute the horror, but you don't really mind as long as there's a sort of horror atmosphere in it. You're not looking for it to be scary. You want it to be funny. But if you're looking for a horror film that maybe has wee moments of levity, I think that's harder to do because, I mean, you need the levity to be obviously funny, but not too funny, because it takes you out of like maybe the suspense or the tension that's been built up.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. I think that's where, even though again, Deacon's, I think Scream, because I remember I was saying I rewatched Scream again recently for like the first time in about 12 years, and that's something that I noticed. They do these comedy bits in there, and even though it is, you know, supposed to be poking fun at the slasher film and it's supposed to be taking it apart and, you know, putting it back together again in a different way, the comedy's too sort of teenage rompy and stuff like that, and it just takes away from
some of it. Kind of sticks out, like it's a bit odd. Like,
it's really, really glaring, especially when they're trying their damnedest to recreate the slasher genre, and they're trying to create this dread around Ghostface stalking, you know, these teenagers in their houses and fucking murdering them. Like, and it just pulled me out. I couldn't remember being that sort of naff, that sort of stupid, trying to be funny, but like the comedy's awful in it. Like,
but the thing I like about Scream is that Ghostface is incompetent. Like, like they can like knock him over and stuff, and he's like, oh shit, like that. Well, that's more scary movie. Like,
that's what I keep getting confused between Scream and Scary Movie.
Like watching the first Scary Movie and watching Scream, they're the same film. You know what I mean? Like, it's like it is a lot of it shot for shot. You just forget how similar those two films are.
It's frightening though. It just shows how devastating. I think it shows how devastating a party can be to a film's reputation. You know what I mean?
All I can think is like, take my strong hand. I know that's the second one. I remember that's the second Scary Movie. I don't even know, is it on Scream?
Apparently, Scary Movie fans, they actually argue like Godfather fans argue. You know, what's better, one or two?
Four. Scary Movie 4 is the best one.
A mashup I always wanted to do. This wasn't necessarily on film. I was thinking of like a theater piece.
Right.
It was a zombie musical.
Ah.
I always thought that'd be pretty funny because obviously zombies can't really talk or sing. So how would that work? So I just thought that'd be a really funny
idea. Did you write this or was this just an idea?
There's a few songs.
there's drafts.
You have to bring at least one of those songs on next week.
I'll find my book. I've got a special book.
Yes, I love it.
Zombie musical book.
All enough, you saying that, two genres that I always wanted to see mashed up, because they're, like your one, they're completely unrelated, and I actually wrote, it'll never see a light of day, not even they, my closest friends. I wrote a wee short script once, just fucking about, because I wanted to see how it would happen, but I wrote a film noir zombie film.
Ooh. I think I remember this.
I wrote a it was only like 2 years ago. Like, it's not like,
oh no, I'm thinking about way back in the day.
No, I'm not. No, that was just a standard zombie film when I was 15, and that's been burnt. Yeah. that was me taking my first steps on trying to write something because I was getting on the films. But I filmed the war zombie film. But the way I was going to play it, and the way I thought it would have worked or would have been pretty cool is that. And this is always, I think all the best sort of mashups work in this way, where they present it as just your standard genre piece for like maybe the first 20 or 30 minutes. But in the first 20 or 30 minutes, you notice that maybe someone's a wee bit off, but you can't tell what, because you're that just kind of engaged by the film. But I was going to have it as like a normal, like PA walking through this hotel, I love the way I'm just trying to sell a script of mine.
It's never going to see the light of day. Here it is.
But let me tell you everything about it.
It was this PA walking through a hotel. No dialogue or not like that there because I can't write dialogue. So he's going for this hotel and he's like investigating a case. And he's walking from one room to the other because he sees like this trail of blood. And it's like all this voiceover and stuff. You're like, you know, kind of classic Fall Noir voiceover. And as soon as he opens the door in black and white as well, it's fucking like really CGI looking zombie just bursts out of them and you're like, what's going on here? But I mean, I don't know, it just at the time I thought it would work, but then just saying it there and I realize it's shit.
That's good. Keep working on it.
Yeah, I forgot about it now.
I would say practical effects for the zombie, not CGI. That's mainly.
You think we can afford CGI? We're working on a 50-pound budget probably. It'll be you with a couple of fucking straps of bacon tied onto your face.
Couple of biscuits
and bacon just smashed all of me. But a fake blood. I probably just red sauce actually. Fuck making fake blood.
Yeah, red sauce.
Red sauce does a trick. Oh, actually no, it's black and white too. You know what I mean? Who cares?
Brown sauce.
It's on. When are we starting shooting, guys? Hey? I'm not gonna sound this now.
Just as well. You all have to be in my zombie musical as well.
Definitely.
It's called Deadbeats.
I do. I mean,
ooh. Oh, that's hilarious.
That's really good. I completely missed that until then. Deadbeats is fucking amazing.
Deadbeats awesome.
How much does this? We could start our own production company. You've got a zombie musical. I have a zombie film noir. Mickey can get the buskets.
I have a film about a man showing his dick to his employer.
What? Have you made this?
No, I wrote it.
What's it called?
No, I didn't.
Man shows dick to employer.
Basically.
Dick boss.
Mikey, that sounds like a very thin plot. This is certainly not a feature film, though.
No, yeah, it is. No, <would you? laughs> no,
it's
yeah,
it's 3-hour epic.
No, it's like a wee 5-minute short film I wrote.
You should make that.
A while ago.
Let's make that. We could do that right here. I could play your boss. Show me your dick.
No, I have to go to work.
Not now.
Guys, I've got a meeting and then you're left with your boss and then...
You see, the boss is a female.
Oh, well, keeping him be the boss.
For me.
I'll go to work. I'll do your shift, right?
So, Shan, get your dick out.
To who?
Show it to Kiva.
I'm the boss.
She doesn't want to see that.
Nobody wants to see it, Shan.
That's the point of the film.
Okay. No, actually, I don't know why I'm still talking about this, but the thing about it is, have you ever gotten so drunk that all you have is images in your head, but you're not sure in what order they happened in?
Mickey, who do you think you're talking to? Of course.
But no, so
every time I do this podcast, I get that.
That's no, my process of thought.
Well, how drunk?
No, so the process of it was that he has like these four images in his head of his dick. His boss, like something, can he mind what the audio? So he doesn't know what order the things happened in, so he doesn't know if he actually showed his dick to his boss.
So it's like Memento with dicks?
Basically.
Essentially.
Yes.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
I like that.
I
like it more when you explained it that way.
Yeah.
As opposed to just a boy walking in their room and showing his dick there again. It sounds a bit rapey.
That's like. You could get fired for that, you know.
See, that's the thing.
I want to see what happens post dick showing.
Or you could get hired for that.
Depends what line of work you're on. If you're a fluffer, you're sort of.
I think what happens at the end is that he ends up making out with a guy. Not quite sure.
Has this got been wrote?
Yeah, it is wrote.
I demand they see it after this podcast.
I don't know where it is.
Right.
Find it.
To keep people on the edge of their seats, next week's podcast will involve the songs for your Deadbeats musical, the script for my Fall Noir zombie film, and the entire script for Mickey's Show Your Dick to Your Boss film.
And we'll still have the tinsel up from Christmas.
I think us...
That's there. That lives there now.
I think us just describing projects that we've once done just shows our limitations, talent-wise.
Well, no, I've...
Like, because we're sitting here pretending now, being all like, oh, it's just something I wrote. Like, I don't really care, but you know for a fact we're giving our all. Every one of those projects, we were giving it everything we got.
No, well, I have another film where a guy, like, he gets stranded out in the country and he shows his dick to a cow.
Is this a series?
Oh, no, that happened to you.
Yeah.
That's biographical. That's fucking biographical. That's the time you got lost after, what was it, Glasgow Festival?
Glasgow
Festival.
Yeah.
Mickey got abandoned like in the country and had a fucking thumb at home and he showed his dick to a cow. He didn't mean it, like, he was taking a piss and the cow was staring at him.
Aye, but then the cow kept staring at me, so I ducked underneath some bushes and crawled along the road for a bit and then popped back up and the cow was still looking at me. I was like, how did you know?
If they're staring at you though, like, especially like a field full of cows, you should go because they're going to stampede at you.
What?
Oh, really? I just thought cows look at you.
They're all, what are you in my field? And I'm like, I wasn't in their field though.
I was out in the road.
I didn't know cows stampeded. I thought they were like too fucking lazy and didn't really know what was going on.
Oh, any animal can stampede.
I didn't see
just
cows.
Just need one bad apple.
Once so one goes.
Spotlight all over again. It's an epidemic.
Hang on, were we actually still talking about a topic or how did we get onto this?
We were talking about mashups. My topic of a genre mashup. Okay. So.
My genre mashups are all pretty boring. They're all just kind of sci-fi with other things.
Oh, it's not bad. Tell me what.
I don't know, like sci-fi fantasy, I think, is good, such as Star Wars. Or yeah. Like sci-fi westerns, pretty good, such as Star Wars. No, but like
things about stars and wars. Star Wars.
I actually went to the toilet earlier, and I'm wearing Star Wars underwear, and I realized Star Wars backwards is Rats Raw.
Mikey, you've been obsessed with Star Wars for about 20 years, and this is, I think, the peak now. You can only go so far, Mikey. You've had the pinnacle of knowledge in regards to Star Wars. How the fuck have you only noticed that?
Rats Raw is definitely going to be a character in my zombie musical. Yeah. I'm just Rats saying.
I think Rats Raw should be the name of my PA. Rats Raw, see? What's all these fucking zombie things, see?
No, but yeah, like sci-fi and western, like as it was done, like Firefly and stuff like that, as well, where it was more heavily western, but with like a sci-fi ilk.
Or done
less so in Cowboys and Aliens.
What was the
stole
Cowboys and Aliens, not versus Aliens.
Exactly.
The film version of Firefly, Serenity.
Serenity, yeah.
Serenity, I like that. That's I like Firefly too. It was just sad that it was.
Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Oh, he's getting better at it. We had this thing a few weeks back before you started coming on the podcast where I always get slagged because I can't pronounce actors' names, and fair enough, some actors' names I completely butcher, but the one actor's name that I can get right is one of the most complicating. Chiwetel Ejiofor?
I still think that's wrong.
Not oddly enough, I was on his Wikipedia page 2 days ago and I looked at the pronunciation of his name. I don't ask me why I do these things. It was very boring work. Chiwetel Ejiofor, give it a go.
Chiwetel Ejiofor?
Yes, first go, straight at the bat. Keep
I don't even know who it is though.
It's fucking Solomon Northman from 12 Years a Slave.
Right, okay.
That's him.
Chiwetel Ejiofor. There's not a T in there? Chiwetel?
Chiwetel?
Is it a T or a W?
I think there's a W in the first name.
Chiwetel?
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 Check his name. No. Check his name.
No, it's better a mystery. Well, what do we meet him and ask him?
It's never going to happen.
Ask him about that and what was it like being in Kinky Boots.
And ask also what his favourite genre mashups would be. And also ask him, will he be in your Shoe Your Dick to Your Balls film?
He needs to be the dick.
I want you to be my dick.
There's nobody else for the role, Chiwetel.
Any other genre mashups people want to talk about?
No, I think we're done. I think we've exhausted that topic. In fairness, I think we've through that topic had a long, hard, cold look at ourselves as well.
Yeah.
and where our creative spark is actually going.
I feel different about myself now.
I was thinking as well, what would be really, really mental is if we fucking mashed all three of those projects together. So we had a zombie film noir musical where a boy shows his dick to his boss. That has awards written all over it.
Dollar bills, yo!
We'll be making it rain in no time.
See, I just kind of came to the realization, like, maybe I should stop showing my dick to people.
Never stop. Well, never stop.
That's better than a realization that I've just had, that I have no talent whatsoever. As much as I try and convince myself, I do not.
Oh. Okay, we'll move on to recommendations.
I just kind of jumped ahead either. My recommendation this week is Glengarry Glen Ross. I think it's 1992. Directed by James Foley, wrote by David Mamet, who is one of the best writers of dialogue and just best screenwriters or theatre writers ever. Probably has the best ensemble cast ever. It's like Al Pacino, Kevin Spacey, Jack Lemmon, Alan Arkin, and
Alec Baldwin.
Alec Baldwin, and as well, Ed Harris, one of my favorite actors. Mm. It's set around this real estate company. It's literally about one day in this real estate company where they're all kind of fighting against each other so you can get the best sales, because apparently that real estate company is failing. They get a guy from Mitch and Murray, which is Alec Baldwin, they come down and basically threaten them with their job. So it's all them plotting against each other and trying to sell as many leads, as they're called, which is just basically land as possible. And it's just phenomenal. Like I was talking about the film I watched this week, Spotlight. I wouldn't say it's very similar to that in any way, narrative-wise. You know, there's fucking jail abuse and all I got there happening in there, but it's very similar in the fact that there's no fat on it. It's all outstanding performances, but nobody overshadows anybody else, you know what I mean? It's just top actors on top of their game with fucking a great story and great dialogue, and you should definitely give it a go.
Kiva!
My recommendation this week is a film called Headhunters.
Yeah.
I believe it's Norwegian, mm-hmm. So it's subtitled. I don't think there's a dubbed version, but you don't need it.
Is there a dubstep version?
There is. It is about an art thief whose wife is an art dealer. I don't think she's aware of the thievery. But he seems to be in a relationship with her under a kind of false premise that he's richer than he is.
Yeah.
So he's hoping for this one big steal. He says there's two things about art, thieving art, I'm going to call it, is either you're going to get caught or you're going to make a massive payoff and you'll never have to do it again. He makes an enemy in Jamie Lannister. I don't know his real name.
Nicholas Coster-Waldau.
Oh!
He makes an enemy in him, which is never a good idea. And madness pursues.
Yeah.
It's available on Netflix. Watch now.
Possible spoilers. Does somebody get their head chopped?
I don't know.
A dog does get stuck in the front of a pickfork, though. No, not a pickfork. Sorry, a tractor. Why the fuck did I say pickfork? What is a pickfork?
I thought you meant like a trident.
A trident?
Like a pitchfork.
Yeah.
What the fuck is a trident?
Like a three-pronged thing that pitchfork? The devil has in King Triton.
Ah.
Oh, I thought
Ariel's
it was...
There.
Yeah.
Ariel's dad.
Ariel's dad.
He stabs the shit out of Ursula. Fuck you.
He's literally called King Triton because he's big, massive Triton.
Okay, fair enough.
Apparently, it has three heads.
I stand corrected.
My recommendation this week is a very nostalgic one for me. I haven't watched it in a while, but
you're a very nostalgic man, Mickey. Yeah. I've said that about you before. I'll probably put that in your gravestone.
I often remember that about myself. no, it's Dead Man's Shoes by Shane Meadows. Favorite of ours, Paddy Considine.
Absolutely love him.
I mean, when me and Chan first seen the film when we were
15
youths.
But boys.
No, we actually really enjoyed it. I'd say now maybe like seeing a bit more about film. Like it's still a good film, but you know, it wasn't as spectacular as what we thought.
I don't know, because
it still stands out for me just because it just the kind of notes that it hit with me, like that's the kind of first film that really did it for me kind of thing. So it is the whole nostalgia thing for me.
I still think it's a great film. I mean, I know we're trying to keep this quick, but even though it's a pipper thin plot, Considine's amazing in it, and it's just that really unbelievably grim atmosphere in the Midlands of England that Shane Meadows is able to drop. And you would almost say that he could near enough classify it as a fucking horror film at times too, because it's just human horror. This boy stalking these boys because you know they've done something in the past, which I won't spoil. They someone in his family, like, but it's I think it's a great film. And oddly enough, it was going to be my recommendation this week because we were at a house party the other night. And we were at a house party this week, and somebody whacked on a clip it. It's that really tense scene where the head of the gang goes up and confronts Paddy Considine.
This is my favorite scene in the film, so and good. I always quote it, which is a terrible thing to quote.
Can I just say, though, it just shows the type of parties that we go to.
Somebody at 6 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the morning, somebody whacks on a fucking Dead Man's Shoes clip. But it's the scene, and he's just so intense. And I'm the same as you nostalgia-wise, where it's one of the first times when I was maybe first getting the film in me early teens or whatever that I seen a performance that actually kind of shook me. And especially I think it was even more satisfying and it embedded with me even more because I had no idea who this guy was. You know, it wasn't a Tom Hanks or a Tom Cruise or, like, you know, a name actor.
Yeah.
It was some very, very unknown actor at the time, and Paddy Considine, who's went on the kind of bigger things now. But it's that scene where he's all, "You're there, mate. You're fucking there." And he just squeezes his hand with him inside it. Like, it's, oh, it's so intense.
Oh, no, I was on about the one, the bar where Paddy Costa is just kind of looking at the gang.
Oh,
and then the kind of head of the gang, wherever, decides to kind of stand up in front of his midst to try and be a big man kind of thing. He's all like, "What you looking at, mate?" And straight away, Paddy Costa is just all, "You cunt!" Straight away, like, he barely finishes his sentence, just bangs his chair, he's all, "You cunt!"
Oh, it's so good. I want to watch it, like, tonight or something. Well, actually, I'm going there part of the night, so I'll just wag it on.
Just
there.
Wag it on.
But hey, guys, I brought this mixtape with me.
But because it is, like, a low-budget kind of English film as well, and because we've seen it when we were a bit younger, it kind of felt like something we only knew about, kind of. Yeah. Like, if you said to your man or dad, I was like, "Oh, you seen Dead Man Cheese?" Like, no. I was like, of course you didn't. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it kind of has that wee thing. It's like, oh, it's our wee film.
It's our film. Helps, like, their teenagers,
right? Because I was really disappointed then when I went to uni and mentioned Dead Man Cheese. Like, oh, I have seen that. I was like, fuck.
That's my thing.
I bought you for your birthday once many moons ago, too.
Yeah, I still have it.
On DVD. I also have it on DVD.
It's on DVD. Let's lend our DVDs to each other.
I think we just finalizing that, we Dead Man Choose 2, because it was so low budget and because it was a sort of film that I hadn't seen before. Like, it was before I'd seen, like, kitchen sink dramas, you know, like Ken Loach sort of films, or before I'd seen, like, kind of just any sort of low budget film in general. It kind of gave me the feeling, like, as, like, maybe, I don't know, when I was 14, 15, maybe 16, when I seen it, that I could do that. Me and my friends could possibly make it, because it is, like, super low budget. It was, like, made for, like, a couple of $100,000 or, like, maybe $50,000 or something like that. But it just made it feel achievable. You know, it took away that sort of sheen and glamour of all the Hollywood films that you were used to seeing, and you know for a fact that you couldn't do, well, like, fucking a couple of $100 million, like, and it made it seem like you could actually achieve that.
You just need a camera, a couple of minutes, like.
That's it. It's pretty much like, you know.
Credit union loan.
But you have to give an excuse to the credit union, you know, why you need the loan. Why do you need your loan? I'm going to make my masterpiece.
It's about a show, my dick to my boss, right?
And then a cow. And they're singing zombies. Yeah. It's good.
And there's a PA in there. And it's set in 1942.
So, credit union, Derry, we're coming toward you.
We're coming for you, and we want $60,000.
Okay, I think we'll wrap it up there then. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to get in contact with us, you know, suggest some of your failed movie ideas, you know, we can make them. We'll head down to the credit union next week. We can put you on the bill. You can get in contact with us on Facebook, Let's Talk More Movies Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Talk More Movies, or you can email us letstalkmoremovies@gmail.com. You can also like us, review us on iTunes, Acast, and also on Stitcher Radio. I have been your host, Michael Breslin. Kivas Schwinney's been Kivas Schwinney.
Hey, and bye.
Janko's been Janko.
Yeah.
Episode
36.
What?
Thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.
We've never had talent, have we?
I have. It's all right, Kiva. Go to work in a bar.
No, it's just I only work in a bar. It's where you put the emphasis.
Punctuation is key.
On that note, I'm running.